The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome, everyone. My name's Ying. So it's just such a delight to be here, spending the morning with you, meditating and sharing Dharma. And so what's been vivid on my mind recently is this topic of devotion. And so today I'd like to share a few words or share some reflections on devotion. I noticed that devotion isn't often talked about somehow in our circles. But it is quite a rich practice and topic, maybe in different traditions. And so if I when I reflect on my own Dharma path, I come to realize kind of how significant devotion has been for me in many different ways. And some of them I wasn't even aware of the impact of it until much later, you know, as I reflected upon it and what it means. And so kind of different devotional practices and expressions have somehow done some things to my system and kind of my being, and it supported me in my Dharma path. And I think it can be a supportive force for many people. And so in the West sometimes, and maybe the some Western culture, when we talk about devotion, there may be a wide range of reactions. And some might simply tighten up and be afraid of, or feel that this is not for me. And then sometimes there can be association of devotees or devotional practices that are kind of for those who may not, you know, be able to intellectually understand things. So certain connotations come along with devotion. And, you know, people sometimes relate to devotions with respect of devoting to a guru or God or believe in certain things. That they may hold on to them too tight. But for others, devotional practices can be a heart-opening process and can kind of soften the grip. And so you can see there can be kind of wide range extremes. You know, for certain people, it's heartwarming. And if I reflected certain devotional practices that I've involved in, I feel that warmth and a softening, and kind of sometimes you can just bow down to the ground. And then yet for certain people, it may also not really register. You know, it's not something that really relates to people when we talk about the devotion. I know maybe, you know, because of the Asian culture background, I came from China, and there are a lot of devotional components in our culture. I remember in my in-laws' house in India, and I went to Kerala in their house. I used to listen to this wonderful music and songs playing in the house all the time. For a while, I didn't know what they were. But after a while, I realized those were kind of devotional songs and devotional chanting music. They're very beautiful songs and music. And they would be listening to this a lot of times in the day. Sometimes it feels like all day long. And then over time, I realized and they play this everywhere. Shopping mall, grocery store, A lot of this devotional songs playing and chants playing everywhere. And so that's quite rich in their culture. And it's very natural for them to feel devoted and or devotional towards certain gurus, teachers. And so for me, when I hear about the word devotion, it can evoke different qualities in me. And devotion does have a significant place in the realm of a dharma. And just think about Buddha was in, 2,600 years ago, and was in a rich, still, even back then, a devotional culture in India. And I'll speak about some different qualities around the devotion today. And the first one that oftentimes pop up when people think about the devotion is that of a trust, or faith, confidence. And so trust in one is devoted towards, having confidence in teachings or the teachers. And sometimes it's devotional to one's own capacity. And so devotions may not necessarily be devoting to gurus and teachers, but rather it's about ourselves. It's about us. But when I think about the devotion, when contrasting with the faith, there are also some differences between the two. And so devotion sometimes have a richer felt sense. When I relate to it, and the heart quality in it, and there's some emotional and the physical aspects of devotions. And faith tends to be a little more on the mental side, having trust, confidence, and the belief in certain things. And so when you look at the definitions of devotions, it can have words like love, enthusiasm, and the synonyms of the word devotion is that of steadfastness, commitment, dedication. And faith, on the other hand, it is related, but it's also kind of different. And faith is related to, or the definition of a faith is confidence, trust, and a belief. And so the quality of faith, trust, and confidence is very important along the Dharma path. And it's not difficult to kind of understand that it'll be very difficult to be faithful when there is no trust at all, right? And so when there is a trust, devotion can become a natural expression. And so when we are talking about having devotions to the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and the Triple Refuge, we have a trust in them. And that's the aspect of devotion. And in the ancient teachings that are documented in what we call suttas, and kind of ancient teachings, text of words of the Buddha or Buddha's disciples. And there are descriptions about a class of a people that are called faith followers. And this is a class of disciples who follow the Dharma primarily by their confidence and trust in the Dharma. And sometimes faith and devotion can have a bad rap, maybe because of the notions of a blind faith. And, one would associate a blind faith as believing something without really clearly knowing it. And it can be that nowadays a lot of us are educated, and when we're thinking about people who are devotional and faithful, it can be associated as not necessarily, highly educated and not thinking too much. But on the other hand, the devotional individuals can have quite a special kind of capacities that are not necessarily defined by the intellect or the degrees or the knowledge that we may have. And certainly for myself, a lot of things that accumulated through education or readings, I think it kind of quickly fade away. I always amazed how much kids would forget what they learned just after 2 months in the summer break. But the devotional individuals can have a certain embodied way of intelligence in them that can be supportive for their overall well-being. So Bhikkhu Bodhi, one of the prominent Western monk who had done a lot of work about ancient text, wrote recently in an article about the faith followers. Faith followers are the ones who gains the path, are following the path with faith as the driving force, inspired by faith. He or she resolves on the ultimate truth and thereby gains the path. And so we all of you might know that there are lots of lists in the Buddhist teachings. One of them is the five spiritual faculties, and faith is the first one on the list of five: faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And so this is a list of five spiritual faculties, and faith leads the way. And that's the first one on the list. And so it's a quite important aspect to cultivate in the Buddhist path. And the Buddhist path. And so it can also be very significant. I recently heard Gil had just given a short dharmat about this topic related to faith. And it has to do with when one enters the path, or one takes a step towards the Buddhist practice. The first requires certain levels of trust and confidence to take the steps. But as we go along the way, we begin to have value or benefits kind of bubbling up in our being, and maybe certain sense of well-being that can bubble up. We begin to have what's called verified faith. What it means is we become clear about what is being taught and the Dharma teachings, and we become kind of embodied in what is being talked about. And so when this kind of a faith that's called verified faith growth, it kind of keeps us on a momentum to have even stronger faith, stronger devotion to the practice. And at some point, this kind of momentum will build up into a certain level where we'll have certain breakthrough, where all of the doubts that we have about the practice, about the teachings, will disappear, will fade away. And then that It can be a significant moment, and sometimes that's related to one of the four awakenings. And so it's kind of associated with the big notion of a stream entry. And it's when one have kind of a perfected the faith, but not necessarily because of just because of the belief, but also this verified faith. It's kind of down on to our system, and we no longer have doubts. And so that can be significant. Now, besides the trust and confidence, there are other qualities that are related to the sense of a devotion. And then I'll share some today also. And this one of them that kind of oftentimes come along with the devotion quite strongly is that sense of reverence. And very early on in my practice, when I first started my graduate school in Illinois, at that time, you know, it was more than 20-something years ago. So at that time, I, you know, didn't know about suttas and, you know, not a lot of books. And I didn't have a real Dharma teacher. You know, it was a school campus, and it's hard to find Dharma teachers on campus. But a group of us, students, and mostly Chinese-American students, and we did have what we called a student body, kind of Buddhist study group, and most of us are Chinese-Americans. And we got together every Sunday morning, we'll be in one of the students' apartment, and we'll do some rituals, like a bowing and chanting Buddha's names in front of a Buddha statue. That's kind of our church-going activity back on campus. But to me, the Buddha represents some form of a higher possibility, and the purity of the heart, and the higher possibility of being human, beautifully perfected human capacities, qualities, virtuous capacities, and wisdom. And so for me, it's really something and you know, worthy of respect. That was kind of how I felt, you know, without much of a knowledge of what this is all, what the teachings are. It was inspiring for me, and I felt a deep sense of respect to what's possible. And so the bowing, when I bowed down, what I felt was bowing down to this higher possibility. And so that's quite inspiring. In the Theravada Buddhism, a type of a prostration is known of the five-point veneration. I think some of you might know, which includes the two palms, the knees, two knees, and our forehead. And so you bow down and then put the hands, the palms down, and the knees down, and the forehead down on the ground. And that's called five-point veneration, and paying the respect. In Thailand, the specific prostration is accompanied by the Pali verse of paying respect to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And you bow down, and you also chant the Pali words associated with it. And so there is that sense of reverence, respectful unto what is possible, and the beauty of it. In other Buddhist traditions, this can be prominent as well. And so Roshi Philip Kaplu says, this is in Zen, the act of unself-conscious prostration before a Buddha is possible under the impetus of reverence and gratitude. Such horizontal links of the mast of ego clings the heart mind, rendering it flexible and expansive, and open the way to an understanding and appreciation of the exalted mind and manifold virtues of the Buddha and the patriarchs. So there arises within us a desire to express our gratitude and to show our respect before their personalized forms through appropriate rituals. So there is, you know, a lot. And that itself is a form of a devotion, even though it kind of captures the quality of reverence or respect. And I talked a little bit about this aspect of a devotion that is also having to do with ourselves and devoted to our own possibilities. And similarly, in terms of a reverence, that too, and there is a aspect of reverence that is about reverence to the nature of all things, including ourselves, and having respect to the nature of all things, including ourselves. And here again is a story about the Zen master, Philip Kaplu, in a Dokusan. And so Dokusan is kind of like a practice discussion where a student will meet the teacher, kind of having a discussion called a Dokusan. So Zen master Kaplu recounts his first stay in a real Zen monastery. How well, too, I remember the first time I came before my teacher in Dokusan. As you know, it is customary to prostrate oneself before the Roshi as a sign of respect and humility. But how that went against my grain, and how I resisted it. What does all this have to do with the Zen? So that was what he was asking. My teacher, well aware of the thoughts within me, said nothing. Viewing my frustrated maneuvers at each Dokusan with an amused smile. Then one day, when I was having a more awkward time than usual trying to prostrate, he suddenly shouted at me, "Kaplu-san, when you make prostration in Dokusan, you are not bowing down before me, but before your own Buddha nature." And so there is that respect and reverence in relationship to devotion. And so we're paying respect to our own Buddha nature. And the other aspect of a devotion that I want to talk about is that the quality of a softening and settling and calming aspect of a devotion. When I first encountered the Buddhism, I started with a Pure Land Buddhist Sangha in Minnesota back in college. I had a very vague memories of the whole Pure Land Buddhism. but what I remembered very vividly has to do with the chanting and the rosaries and the beats that people move using their fingers when they chant. Mostly they chant different Buddhist names in the Pure Land Buddhism. I initially didn't really associate with this very much, and especially since most of people who, you know, do this are kind of elderlies. You know, I had my pride. I was 20-year-old in college. But it was not until years later I began to realize And this form of a devotional practice, chanting Buddha's names and rosaries, had a tremendous impact on the individuals who carried this practice. They cultivated a lot of stability and concentration in them. I began to have a lot of respect over time when I began to realize the power of this kind of practices, the devotional practices. Because as we do this, our mind calms down, a lot of our preoccupations would fade away, our heart began to soften, and the body begins to relax, and it becomes easy to settle and become concentrated, collected. So a Chinese modern Chan master, a kind of Chinese Zen, Shen Yan, who spoke about his own experience of prostration in his early days of being a monk. He says, "Every morning and evening, I did 500 prostrations before Guan Yin, the same Bodhisattva of compassion to whom I had chanted with my mother. Normally, I found the prostrations difficult and would sweat profusely. But one morning, well into my routine, I felt a force enter through the top of my head. But my mind no longer directed my body to do them. I felt cool and refreshed, and my mind became clear and bright. It was as if the Bodhisattva had come and given something to me, as if a block that I was not aware of had been removed, and a cap had been taken from my head." And so there can be this kind of effect when we are engaged in the devotional practices fully. And a lot of self-consciousness will fade away. And one can become kind of quite unified with the whole process of devotional practice. And it almost doesn't matter what it is anymore. We can simply just being there, right in front of us, being devoted to whatever is right in front of us. And so for me, I often distinctly notice how my mind would settle after chanting or listening to certain chants for a while. And it is a form of a meditation for many people. In Tibetan Buddhism, prostrations are seen as a means to purify one's body, speech, and mind. And so it has a purification quality to it. Now, kind of on the other side of the softening and the calming, devotional practices can be also energetic. In some of the Asian cultures, devotional practices can be expressed in very energetic ways. And so it can be very energizing, and so rather than kind of calming, and it can also have the balance of energetic expression. And so in India, as I was talking about, the devotional practices oftentimes come along with the music and songs and dances too. So there can be a lot of devotional dances as well. In Theravada tradition, even though the entertainment is not encouraged, kind of we don't encourage people to grasp on entertainment, right? But pujas are done quite often. Pujas are kind of rituals and chants. And so in Theravada monasteries, oftentimes the pujas are done in the morning, evening, after, before the meals, and there can be a way to bring the energetic devotional aspect of the practice through the pujas. And sometimes the pujas can be very long. You kind of really need to arouse certain levels of energy to engage in it. And a story about a Chinese Zen master, Hong Po, of 9th century, is said to have done prostration so intensely that he wore a permanent red mark on his forehead. How much he kind of gave himself over to this practice. And the last one I'll talk about in relationship to devotion is that of a surrendering and letting go and kind of breaking the boundaries of things, self, you versus me, and others versus us. And that aspect of inclusive, becoming inclusive of all things. In my own experience, and the devotional, deep devotional practices, that devotion, when devotions pour out of me, is when there can be a profound sense of letting go. Letting go of I, me, mine. Letting go of self-identities. Who I am. And when I can really surrender to whatever is right in front of me. And so the Indian mystic Satguru says, devotion is devoid of self. I love this expression. You know, when we're engaged in the devotional practices, it has very little to do with who we are devoted to. But it's really about devoid of self. And we're giving ourselves over to what is right in front of us. And so he says, devotion is a tremendous tool to break all limitations within oneself, whether it is psychological, emotional, or karmic restrictions. If there is a flood of devotion, it will carry one across all these boundaries effortlessly. Devotion is not a deduction that one makes. Devotion is a way to rise beyond all deductions. You know, sometimes when we're thinking of we're only believing one thing or one view, it can feel like a deduction, you know, kind of reducing. But devotion is not to reduce or deduce. It's not a form of a deduction, but rather it's opening. It's kind of crushing the boundaries, but really opening wide open and becoming inclusive of all things. And so he used quite a strong word here. He said, devotion is a bulldozer that crushes all resistance within you. With the devotion, everything gets unified. A heart that is devoid of devotion is a barren heart. It needs too much work and stimulation to make it blissful. A heart that is filled with devotion is fertile. It will naturally be blissful. I think we have to see it for ourselves what this is. But the image is very vivid. You know, it can be a force. A devotion can be a bulldozer that crushes all resistance. And so, and then now it's not about believing what I say, you know, what the devotion is and is not, but rather, you know, practicing and then see it for yourselves, right? And whether this is something that'll evoke certain force within you? Or maybe not. It doesn't have to be for everybody. So I talked a bit about the qualities of a devotion. And you may ask, what the devotional practices one may undertake. And there are many. And so I kind of, in this talk, there are several different forms. I mentioned prostration. And oftentimes, prostrate in front of a Buddha statue or a teacher. And, or just prostration and can be a form. And it's a common form in many traditions. And then chanting. For me personally, that's a practice that I love. And sometimes, even if I don't understand the meaning of the words, just the chanting itself can bring a sense of softening and letting go. And so for many people, I know that have done chanting, have found rich dynamics when practicing with the chanting. And so that's another potential way of engaging in devotional practices. And so, I was thinking, to end this talk, what I was thinking of doing, maybe just to chant, a few lines that is often chanted in Theravada monasteries. This is a chant about revere the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha. And I'll chant it a few times, and if you like to join me, feel free. And if you simply want to listen, that's fine too. Buddha, 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 Vante, Dhamma, Dhamma, Dhamma Vante, Sangha, Sangha, Sangha Vante, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha Vante. Buddha, Buddha, Buddha Vante, Dhamma, Dhamma, Dhamma Vante, Sangha, Sangha, Sangha Vante, Buddha Dhamma, Sangha Vante. So thank you. So we have a few minutes, and for those who want to share or have a question or comments, feel free to do so. We do have mics right in front of here. If you like to share comments, please use the mic. And if you don't want to say anything, that's fine too. Well, then we will end. So thank you all for coming. May you have the beautiful rest of the day.